Just a couple more follow-ups before we kind of get into new agents and new strategies, looking at some of the elements in the pediatric regimens. One is the issue of the asparaginase. Where do we stand today in terms of what we think the value is, the toxicity, and the difference between the different preparations?
The asparaginase has changed a little bit over the last decade or so. We used to use a standard native E. coli-derived asparaginase, which is no longer available in the United States. It has been transitioned to a pegylated form, which has several advantages. One is you can give it intravenously. Kids don't like to get needles. The second thing is it has a much longer half-life, and we think it's more efficacious. It has a little bit more toxicity, but we think it's more efficacious. So in pediatrics, it's clearly replaced all other asparaginase as a standard of care. And in adults, now you have no choice because it's the only thing available. But what we did in our study and what others have done mirroring that is just trying to figure out the dosing schedule in the adult patients. But it is a drug that can be administered. But one of the things that we talked about or that you raised very importantly is, you know, is it the biology or the patient? And as the patient gets older, the ability to tolerate asparaginase therapy becomes less and less. Especially Americans are a little bit bigger on the bigger size. So there is something called fatty liver or steatohepatitis, which interferes with asparaginase metabolism. Alcoholism, alcohol abuse, or just chronic alcohol intake can interfere with the metabolism. And there's a lot of other medications that adult patients take, polypharmacy, blood pressure, diabetes, etc., that kids don't. And this all interferes not only with the metabolism, but the toxicity. Having said that, it can still be utilized safely and effectively for the vast majority of younger adult patients. And I still believe in that approach, especially for my patients under age 40.